From the Land Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the closing market report for the 11th day of November 2014. I'm Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Wayne Nelson. He's at L&M Commodities in Newmarket, Indiana. We'll also hear about yesterday's report from Daryl Good, ag economist at the University of Illinois, a discussion I had with him just after the close yesterday afternoon. And then as we make our way through the end of the program, we'll pick up the weather forecast from Don Day, Day Weather, out of Cheyenne, Wyoming, and talk about the agricultural energy markets with the folks at Archer Financial Services in Chicago, Illinois. Stephen Platt will join us on this Tuesday afternoon edition of the Closing Market Report, a production of Illinois Public Media.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Checking the numbers as they finished in Chicago on this Tuesday afternoon. The nearby corn December contract up 4.5 cents at $3.73¾ on its settlement. March at $3.86½, 4.5 higher in the May futures at $3.95½, up 4.5. July contract $4.02¾, up 4.5 cents in December of next year at $4.19¼, up 4¼ cents. November beans today, $10.66½, 39 cents higher. January futures at $10.64, up 38¼. March, $10.67½, 37¼ cents higher. In the May futures at $10.71, a settlement price, up 36¼ cents. July, $10.75½, 36¼ higher. In the August soybeans, $10.75¼, up 35½. Next year's November at $10.37½, up 27 cents. Bean meal, $19.70 higher at $400.60. And bean oil at $32.87, up 51 cents. December soft red winter wheat at $5.25¼, up 8 cents for the day. July of next year at $5.44¾. 3¼ cents higher on the afternoon. Live cattle futures in the December at $167.25, up 12.5 cents. February futures were down 12.5 at $168.40 per 100 pounds. November feeder cattle at $238.85, down 17.5 cents. January down a dime at $232.65. The March contract there up 25 cents at $230.55 per 100 pounds. Lean hogs finished the December at $89.90, up 35 cents. February at $89.45. They finished 35 cents higher. You, of course, are listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. Find us online at willag.org. That's willag.org, where we post all of our agricultural programming from the opening market report to the closing market report and everything in between. That's at willag.org. Here's what the outside markets look like at this hour. Crude oil, December contract, $77.81 a barrel, up 41 cents. The RBOB, or wholesale price of gasoline, at $2.10¼, 0.7 cents higher for the day. Ethanol futures down a penny and 0.4 cents at $1.90¼. And the spread between those two is now 0.20¼ cents wide. That's 2¼ cents wider than it was yesterday. Natural gas at $4.23¼, 0.7 cents lower. Diesel fuel at $2.46¼, 0.8 cents lower. And gold futures on the day up $3.20 at $1,163 even. The U.S. dollar at 87.508 at this hour, down 0.302 for the day. Here's what the weather forecast looks like. It comes from the Urbana-Champaign area. Cloudy and a high of 50 degrees with west-northwest wind. We've already topped out, currently 35. We're on our way to a low tonight of 23 degrees. Again, mostly cloudy. And then tomorrow, mostly sunny, a high of just 33. West-northwest winds at 10 to 14. Let me repeat that. Tomorrow, Wednesday, mostly sunny skies and a high of just 33 degrees. And then Wednesday night, cloudy and a low of 20. Thursday, sunny and 31. Thursday night, cloudy and 19. That's right, Thursday night, a partly cloudy evening with a low of 19 degrees. And Friday, sunny skies and 32. Friday night, partly cloudy and 18 degrees. Saturday, Sunday, and 36. Saturday night, a chance of snow, mostly cloudy, and a low of 25 degrees. And Sunday, a chance of snow during the day, mostly cloudy and 34. Cloudy on Sunday night and 20 degrees, and on Monday, mostly sunny to start the next work week and a high of 30 degrees. We'll take a more complete look at the weather forecast when we get to the bottom of the half hour. We'll talk with Don Day of Day Weather in Cheyenne, Wyoming. You're listening, of course, to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. On this Tuesday afternoon, let's take a look at the futures markets and get some analysis with Wayne Nelson at L&M Commodities in Newmarket, Indiana. Good afternoon to you, Wayne. Thanks for being with us. Tell us about the marketplace and what it is that you've seen in Chicago over the last several hours.
Can we say $400 soybean meal?
We can. Can we say somebody got caught?
Above there tonight, that is sort of the bellwether. And where it all began, I think, is there in the meal, the tightness of the meal, the unavailability of the meal to where it needs to be in the feeder's hands, and the funds and the end user's activity in buying the meal. That really helps spur the soybeans.
Yeah, spurs. Once in a while, those in the marketplace smell blood, and I suppose this time around they did too. Is that the case?
Yeah, a lot of blood being shed, part of it being mine, I think. But, you know, we went through the 100-day moving average and yesterday's highs, we run stops today. There's no doubt about it. But we also heard out in the country of different processors upping their bids for soybeans here before they finish up and before the bin doors get locked, and wanting to have some cash beans in their possession so they can keep crushing here as we go on the next couple months for the for moving meal either to the southeast or to the Gulf.
So how long do you think that this can be maintained? I mean, there must be an end to this point somewhere along the lines, because it's not exactly as if we're short a bean supply.
We're not short of bean supplies, and I even noticed on one of the noon comments of one of the very well-read advisory services that he felt that we would actually be closer to $9 after we got through the time period with South American beans come on starting in February there. So, you know, it does look like we can see a little bit of continued buying by the funds, partially maybe by the commercials, and some short covering by those that really believe that the large crop would win out over the demand at this point in time, and seeming to be proven wrong at this point in time. But there will be a point where it's going to be, it will run its course.
Corn was stubborn and didn't follow it all the way up today, did it?
Oh, corn, basically you would have thought that it was the one that they increased the carry out on rather than decreased it with the way it acted today. And when we were up, 30 cents, where corn was only up a couple cents, and that's not very much of following along when everything's going along its way. So the corn is very stubborn here. It's not following the way of the beans. It doesn't have, where if you look at our shipments here out of the Gulf, we're lagging on the corn shipments in respect because we're loading so many boats of beans, and you just can't load over so many boats. Our export business is not near as aggressive in the corn market as it is in the beans.
Does it tell you at some point that the beans have to settle back? Nothing has to happen, but that maybe there might be a place where producers should go ahead and take advantage of the prices. And I don't know whether the cash market managed to follow the futures higher for soybeans.
Like we're saying, there's some basis levels out there that are popping and starting to show up. And I think that what the astute farmer maybe needs to do, if he doesn't feel the board is topped, is but watch some of these basis levels. And there was some very, very attractive ones. I think Gilman, Illinois had a very attractive bean basis bid today. So, looking at some of those, why it might be wiser to move some on a basis if you want to re-own them with a call or something like that down the road might be advantageous rather than just not taking advantage of a flat price.
I saw at least one advisory service suggesting end users lock in all of their needs, meal, corn, and such, soybeans as well. Do you think that's a good idea if you're an end user?
Well, I probably wouldn't lock in everything, but I think that, as we look...
Well, this was through January.
Through January. Okay, now that was just what I was going to say. It was through January time period until we get the South American stuff in line. Maybe doesn't seem like as bad an idea as it sounded a couple weeks ago. And I say that it does look like the farmers have been successful in being tighter holders of their crop than we thought they would be. That 10 days off during harvest that and the stretching out of it really helped the farmer this year.
Indeed it did. Turn your attention to the livestock market. There weren't nearly as many fireworks there today.
You know, that's where the fireworks have been most of the year, and there just wasn't much happening there. You know, a 10 to 25 cent move in the cattle here like that, and the hogs at, you know, a 17 to 30 cent move. Not much activity for the livestock market at all. So very quiet, and I think that basically we saw a little bit of setback in some of it because of the meal and the prices that way. But all in all, still a very strong market over in the meats.
Hey, thank you so much for taking the time with us today.
Thanks, Todd.
Wayne Nelson, of course, is with L&M Commodities out of New Market, Indiana. Joined us here on this Tuesday afternoon edition of the Closing Market Report.
Since 1985, offering strategic commodity consulting and marketing services to help producers manage market opportunities and risks. Stuart Peterson develops strategies customized to each client's goals and operation size. More information at stuart-peterson.com.
Well, if you haven't yet, please do take some time right now to dial this number. It's 800-898-1065. Why? Because I'd like you to pick up a ticket to our Farm Assets Conference. This is going to be a really stellar event in Normal, Illinois, on the ISU campus at the Marriott, a beautiful venue, on Monday, the 24th day of November. That's the day Monday before Thanksgiving and the day before the Commodity Association's annual meeting at the same venue, in fact, in Normal, Illinois, is our Farm Assets Conference. Starts at 10 in the morning, runs till 5 in the afternoon. We'll talk about the Arkin PLC decision with the guy who helped to write a lot of the farm bill and understands just what the Arkin PLC decision will mean over the next 5 years and has been working through that process with ag economists from the U of I like Daryl Good and Scott Irwin. Jonathan Compass will be there to take that up. Gary Schnitke will talk about crop insurance, potential payments from this year's crop insurance, and what next year's potentials might look like. And we'll hear also along the way what the price of farmland might do with Bruce Sherrick. He's the director of the Farmland Center here at the U of I. Funded in large part by TIA Cref. Fantastic day. We'll have many of our analysts, a dozen of them, with us for the Farm Assets Conference. You can dial in right now at 800-898-1065 to pick up your ticket. It's just $25. Go online at willag.org. That's willag.org. You can order securely online as well. Pick up your tickets for the Farm Assets Conference right now today. It's an important thing to do, and we think it'll be one of the best $25 that you invest for the winter meeting season.
Support for WILL Agriculture comes from Murray Wise Associates, LLC, providing nationwide land auctions, farmland sales and management, and financial advice for agribusiness. Information on upcoming land auctions and offerings can be found at MurrayWiseAssociates.com.
Well, yesterday morning, of course, the United States Department of Agriculture released the World Agricultural Supply and Demand Estimates and updated the crop production figures. I spoke with U of I ag economist Daryl Good about those numbers not long after they were released, and here is what he has to say. This was a different report in terms of most would have expected, and I think even the stats would have said, a big corn crop continues to get bigger in this kind of situation, but it didn't. It didn't get that much smaller, but it didn't get bigger either.
No, it didn't get bigger, and you know, honestly, there were a few analysts on record as saying they thought this number would be a little smaller in November compared to October, but the general consensus was it would continue to get bigger after the increase that we saw in both September and October. But in reality, the market seemed to sniff it out a little bit. We've had a pretty good rally in the corn market since the 1st of October, and it kind of had the sense that the market was thinking either demand is better than being advertised or the crop is a little bit smaller. And as it turned out, the crop is a little bit smaller, and still some uncertainty, I think, as always, where the final acreage estimate will come in, but also this year maybe a little more uncertainty about the acreage side. So we'll be looking to both of those pieces as we go forward. But for now, the number seems to kind of confirm that we've seen the low in the corn market, and now the question is, what's the rally potential from here?
Do you think we've seen the low? I take that back. Do you think that the market sniffed out both the lower number in production, the lowered per yield bushel, and the acreage at this point? Has it got both of them targeted? So if we change in January, the question is, if we change in January, if USDA changes in January, does the marketplace actually have that built in at some point, some change at least?
Yeah, it really does. I mean, we saw the low in the corn market, looking back now, occurred on October 1st, and the USDA's crop production report later in the month did contain a lower acreage estimate, and there was some hint of that when the FSA released their acreage report in September. So I think the market had latched onto that, and then we continue to see some of these private estimates of very high corn yields, and I think the market had kind of sensed that those were not going to happen, and had sensed both this acreage reduction, which was later confirmed last month, and then now the lower yield number. And so in retrospect, the market kind of overdid it on the downside, building in too big a crop, but corrected that pretty quickly. And for some, I guess, would argue unfortunate timing that it occurred in October when we were establishing the crop insurance price. But nonetheless, it was a fairly quick recovery of, I think, when the market overshot on the low side.
So we're now at 2 billion bushels for the carryout for corn. We're still at 450 million. That's not a change. But together, you write just one little sentence in your weekly outlook from Monday afternoon that said something to the effect that corn and soybean farmers can now expect profits from both of those crops for the 15-16 marketing year.
Yeah, that's a pretty broad statement, and we know that what constitutes a profitable price is not the same for everyone. But the sense is now that we kind of have manageable stocks of corn and soybeans. They're abundant supplies, but not what I would call burdensome when we're in the 12 to 15% stocks to use ratio. That's something that can be worked through fairly quickly if we return to more normal production in 2015 and beyond. And I think a better opportunity for that on corn, just penciling in a trend yield without an acreage shift, if we plant and harvest the same amount of acreage next year that we did this year on corn, we end up with a crop that's smaller than our current rate of consumption. Again, the caveat is trend yields. And so we would see a year when we would start bringing our inventories down. And that, to me, suggests that we start moving corn prices back in the cash market to the lower to mid $4 range for next year, which the market's not too far from that right now, quite frankly. And so that puts us back into, if not black ink, at least kind of a break-even level for corn producers next year. And I think soybeans, there's probably less opportunity to reduce our inventories next year, because it would take an acreage reduction for that to happen, even with lower yields. So we're likely to see another year of pretty big stocks, but with soybeans at $10, that's still kind of in profit territory for a lot of producers. And if we can hold $10 beans into next year and bring corn back to in the low $4, then we're kind of at that profit level for both crops.
Now come back to this year's crop. A harvest, for all intents and purposes, has completed. Producers have probably shut the bin doors on everything, or at least put it in storage. You had been an advocate of just going ahead and marketing the soybeans. I don't know whether that'll still be the case or not. And storing the corn. Are you still in that position?
Yeah, I think particularly on the soybeans, I just don't see the opportunity without a major problem in South America for much further recovery in soybean prices. So it's kind of sideways at best, I think, at this point. Corn, I think, is a little more iffy now that we've had a 60-cent recovery from the harvest lows. That includes a combination of a little stronger basis already and higher futures prices. How much is left in that rally, I think, is the question, and maybe not a whole lot in the near term. We're still struggling with this 2 billion bushel carryover for now. And also, we have to recognize that exports are a little soft at this point. The USDA didn't change their number, but I think you have to be just a little concerned that exports may come up a bit short. I know it's early in the marketing year, and that pace can change, but we're not selling or shipping corn at the rate we need to at this point. So I think that's going to keep a lid on prices for the time being, and I don't see a lot near-term rally potential in old crop corn prices.
Transportation, the primary issue to drive spikes and valleys in the local basis market?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, it's a combination of transportation and what farmers are deciding to do, whether they really want to let the crop go or not. But what we've seen so far, and I think will continue, will be the transportation issues. So those problems have not been widespread in the eastern Corn Belt, although there are pockets, but certainly as you go west and north, the transportation issues will continue. And I think that speaks to a weaker and probably more erratic basis pattern in those areas.
That's Darrell Good, ag economist from the University of Illinois. I spoke with him yesterday afternoon.
Support comes from AgriGold, celebrating their 12th year as a major corporate underwriter of Illinois Public Media's ag programming and e-newsletter. AgriGold support allows their customers and growers everywhere to receive quality ag information at no charge. More information on AgriGold is at agrigold.com.
Let's turn our attention to the outside markets, the energies in particular, on this Tuesday afternoon. Stephen Platt is on the phone line. He's at Archer Financial Services in Chicago, Illinois. Stephen, the price of crude oil has dropped precipitously over the last several months and weeks. What do you make of it all?
Well, the market's fallen, as when you say precipitously, it's certainly done so in October and really from June. We've fallen about 16% in crude, and since June, about 25%. So we've talked about how the supplies were outpacing demand, and certainly that's come to fruition. I think the market has pretty much done what we kind of looked for here over the past 3 to 4 months. It probably came a lot quicker than I would have expected, but certainly October was a tough month for the market overall. It was supportive at least to the heating oil or diesel. I think that did gain on the crude during the month in terms of the margins being certainly better. But when looking at prices here, November is really shaping up as a pretty significant month. It's a deadline for the Iranian talks. OPEC meeting takes place on November 27th. A lot of people are speculating that they will maintain their high production levels. The other factor certainly is the winter starting, and we're looking at nat gas deliveries to the Ukraine also picking up. So there's a lot of things coming into play. We're generally looking for some support to the market here as the production side comes into play and responds.
Thanks so much.
It's National Vanilla Cupcake Day. On this day in agricultural history in 1683, Robert Morrison died, a Scottish botanist. His work helped lead to the modern system of plant classification. In 1793, Jared Kitland was born, a physician, naturalist, botanist, and teacher. He is credited with developing 26 varieties of cherries and 6 varieties of pears. In 1871, journalist Henry Morton Stanley found missing explorer Dr. David Livingston. Dr. Livingston, I presume. Livingston was in Africa in the hopes of ending the slave trade to the eastern coast of the U.S. and to discover the source of the Nile River. In 1951, as of this day in history, you could call from North Carolina and buy tractor parts at a dealer in California without operator assistance. Coast-to-coast direct dialing began. The very first call went from Englewood, New Jersey to Alameda, California. They were able to talk just 18 seconds after the dialing. Previously, coast-to-coast calls were replaced by long-distance operators. And in 1983, computer viruses became a reality. Fred Cohen created the first documented computer virus while studying for a Ph.D. at the University of Southern California. Cohen hid his virus inside a graphics program called VD, written for a VAX minicomputer. And that's this day in agricultural history.
Support comes from Stuart Peterson, since 1985 offering strategic commodity consulting and marketing services to help producers manage market opportunities and risks. Stuart Peterson develops strategies customized to each client's goals and operation size. More information at stuart-peterson.com.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media on this Tuesday afternoon. Don Day is here. He's with Day Weather out of Cheyenne, Wyoming. Brr, it's cold. It's colder there than it is here, I suppose, but it's going to be cold for a while, a bit of everywhere here in the United States, isn't it?
That's really true. Everybody from the Continental Divide east to the coast of the Atlantic, with the exception of maybe South Florida, is going to feel the effects of an abnormally cold shot of air for November. Not that November gives us a lot of cold. We can, but this is something that we would see more like in December or January type cold. Not only are we going to be looking at cold, but freezing precipitation, not only in the short term, but in the long term, is something that we're going to need to watch, Todd, because this is a pattern that could set up shop for a while.
I guess I should not have ridden my motorcycle to work today. I have a heated vest. It's okay. I'll make it home all right. Hey, as we look forward, because this week and next week, there'll be many farmers in the northwestern part of the Corn Belt that really do need to finish up shucking corn, getting out crops. How bad of a problem is this going to be for them?
Well, I think initially, with a few exceptions in the far northern areas where they're going to see significant snow, the problem is going to be more the cold than a lot of precipitation. I think those areas certainly are going to see some big cold, but snowfall should be light. So for folks trying to get out, I think they'll be okay, but they're certainly going to have to deal with some very frigid temperatures.
Turn your attention to the southern hemisphere, where it's much warmer, and they're at the beginning of their growing season. They had waited for some rainfall. They got some, but I don't know how widespread it was.
Well, you know, I guess for areas of Brazil that really needed the rain, they got some, and they're in line to get more. Argentina is an area that is looking dry here in the week ahead.
Any place else around the world that you're keeping an eye on that might be a problem for crops?
Well, you know, in terms of, you know, if we go down under, it does look like some of the central western areas of Australia have got some good chances for precipitation. So those areas looking good right now. Australia is an area that we're going to need to watch for potential dryness later on.
Hey, thanks so much, Don, for taking the time with us today.
Thank you.
That, of course, is Don Day of Day Weather out of Cheyenne, Wyoming.
Support comes from Stuart Peterson, since 1985 offering strategic commodity consulting and marketing services to help producers manage market opportunities and risks. Stuart Peterson develops strategies customized to each client's goals and operation size. More information at stuart-peterson.com.
Well, that wraps up this edition of the Closing Market Report. Don't forget to visit our website. The address there is willag.org. There you'll find all of our agricultural programming and a way to purchase your tickets for our Farm Assets Conference. That's 800-898-1065. If you just want to make the phone call, or at willag.org. You have a great afternoon. I'm U of I Extension's Todd Gleason.
Leonard Seed Service supports agricultural programming on WILL as an additional service to its customers. Leonard Seed Service is an independent dealer providing DeKalb and Asgrow seed products to farmers throughout East Central Illinois via the Asgrow on-demand bulk soybean handling system. Leonard Seed Service, 217-497-2270.
This is Illinois Public Media.